The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And we are back for round two of our Wednesday night get-together, our final show before the Thanksgiving holiday. We'll have some best-of programs for the next few nights, although, you know, I'm sure you're going to be enjoying turkey tomorrow night, and then you'll be you'll be crashed long before I hit the air. But if not, we'll have some good shows for you for the next couple of nights. And back here live Monday night on Air America Radio. On Monday afternoon, by the way, I will once again be guest hosting the Randy Rhodes Show, and Senator Bernie Sanders is going to be my special guest. So I'll have him on live with me during Randy's show, and we will get to enjoy that interview. I'm sure I can. I will make a double use of it on Monday night on this show as well. And then, of course, Tuesday, we've got the president announcing what he's going to do in Afghanistan. So we do have that to look forward to. All right. So in the last hour, we talked about what this holiday is all about. Shopping. Not really. Actually, that's what the holiday season has become, right? But no, these holidays and Thanksgiving started. Well, do we know how they started? Because what we know about Thanksgiving is not really how this holiday originated. In fact, we were told, you know, that the pilgrims came over and they landed at Plymouth Rock and they made nice with the Indians and they had this wonderful turkey dinner together and made nice. You would really think that happened? If you think that happened, I've got some great swamp land down here for you. So joining me now is my favorite herstorian, my friend Amy Simon, who's been on with me many times before. She hosts the longest-running one-woman show in Los Angeles called Cheerios in My Underwear. That's her website as well, cheeriosinmyunderwear.com. She then branched out and started a radio show and an event called Moms Unplugged, where she brought in different mothers to tell their stories. And now she's currently working on actually a number of projects about our founding mothers and the women who paved the way for people like me to be able to do what I do, called She's History, the Most Dangerous Women in America, Then and Now. Amy Simon, thank you for joining me tonight.
You're welcome. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Are you preparing a meal for tomorrow night?
I am preparing my part of the meal. I have been having Thanksgiving with a group of people, one of my best friends, for about 20 years.
Wow.
And we all bring our bit. I'm not allowed in the place without my noodle pudding and my guacamole.
Guacamole, traditional Thanksgiving fare.
Well, it's L.A.
Yes.
You know, we need an appetizer.
Of course.
I guess it sounds funny, but, yeah, it works.
But actually, turkey wasn't traditional Thanksgiving fare either, was it?
No, and some of what you said is actually true. Some of the myth is true, but no,
yeah.
they didn't have turkey.
No.
The first Thanksgiving actually was in 1624, and yes, with the pilgrims came over, landed on Plymouth Rock in 1620, and they had a really bad winter. They were not prepared for the new world, for the land, and they lost like half of their people. So they kind of freaked out, and they did make friends with some Native Americans, a tribe, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, but the Wampanoags.
Okay.
And the Wampanoags taught them how to live off the land. They taught them about fishing and planting and hunting. And by the autumn of 1621, by the next year, they got it together, and they had enough food to get them through. So they did have a big three-day feast, and they had goose and corn and codfish and my favorite, lobster.
Well, they're in, like, Boston. They're
yeah.
in New England.
Yeah.
What else are you going to have? You have
yeah.
lobster.
Yeah. Lobster, yeah. Yeah, so that really was the first one, but it did evolve Thanksgiving. And then when the Puritans came over, because they were all about religion, and they made it into a religious holiday, and each autumn the governor of each colony declared it a day of, they would fast, they would pray, and then they would thank God for individual events, like a battle that was won, or if it rained after a big drought or a good harvest. So it was about being thankful for specific things. And then, like, that went on for a long time. And then about 1777, after Saratoga, the victory over the British at Saratoga, the Continental Congress actually decreed, they decreed that all 13 colonies will celebrate a national day of Thanksgiving. So they did that, and they did that for, you know, through the 1800s, but there was never a regular day. It was different. You know, one colony would do it in March, one would do it in December, and it was crazy until one woman.
One woman,
she got it into her head to make it a national holiday. I was so excited to find this out. You know, Nicole, I love when we decide to do something because I just immerse myself, and I always learn more new things about fabulous females that get me going.
Uh-huh.
I never heard of this one. Her name is Sarah Josepha Hale. She was born in 1788, a mother of five. She was the first female editor of a major magazine.
Wow.
And she was the author, here comes a fabulous female fact, get ready, of Mary Had a Little Lamb.
No way.
Way.
Mary had a little lamb. I wonder if she sang it or if it was just a poem.
It was a poem. And okay. When she was a mom and she was married and she had all her kids and she'd write some poems, she was dabbling. And then, like so many women, her husband died. And she became a widow, and she needed an income, so she decided to work on some more poems. She became a writer. Somebody asked her to edit a magazine, and then she ended up becoming a big, major magazine editor, and I'll tell you a little bit more about her, but she got it into her head, this was pre-Civil War, that the country needed to be unified. So she started a campaign, a letter-writing campaign, and she just would not let it go, and she wrote to Lincoln. And she said, hey, you know, the country needs to be unified. This will help. You know, we don't want a civil war. And, you know, she just went at it. And she wrote in this whole long letter, and she wrote all kinds of things. But she was also renowned as a magazine editor, so she wasn't somebody off the street. And he said, all right, fine, let's do it. Okay, I'm with you. And
wow.
He did. And he actually did. And he made it was an official national holiday. He did it in 1863. It was 4 months after the Gettysburg address. That's when he made it he said we'll make it the last Thursday of November. So Sarah Josepha Hale is responsible for it being one national holiday the last Thursday of the month.
Right.
Of November. And then Congress made Thanksgiving Day an official national holiday in 1941.
Wow. And so this, our national Thanksgivings, she wrote, Sarah Josepha Hale?
All
the blessings of the fields, all the stores the garden yields, all the plenty summer's pours, autumn's rich or flowering stores, peace, prosperity, and health, private bliss and public wealth, knowledge with its gladdening streams, pure religion's holier beams, Lord, for these our souls shall raise grateful vows and solemn praise.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? Gosh, the language was just so beautiful. We really have come from a beautiful language. That is quite beautiful. What's
okay.
So funny?
Well, yeah, you're funny. You know, this is not my kind of thing. And the religion references in there bug me. Because
me,
Thanksgiving is not a religious holiday. And I don't
country,
think...
Yeah, the country was founded on religion. The more I learn, the more I research, I mean, it was so much founded on religion.
See, but I thought it was founded by people who wanted religious freedom.
Right. They wanted to practice religion in their own way. They didn't want to be told how. There was a lot of religious persecution in England, so they wanted to come over and practice it their own way. But it was still about religion, and there was no separation of church and state, none, until 1802 when Jefferson got in there. But it was all mixed in together, you know, the church and state and laws and religion, it was all mixed up together.
So where were our people back then? Did any Jews come over on the Mayflower? Or were we permitted to practice our religion the way we wanted to?
Oh, gosh, I do not know the answer to that, and
okay.
I look like I'm going to be doing some more research.
Because if it was for religious freedom, I mean, see, that's the thing. And I do agree with we should all be allowed to practice whatever religion we want, or no religion, if that's what we choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Well, that's how it is here now, but it didn't
well,
start that way.
It seems to be going back in a different direction. Anyway, Amy Simon is with us. She's got lots more great stories about women like Sarah Josepha Hale and others that we may not have heard about, including you're going to tell us about where Over the River and Through the Woods came from?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. I'm so excited. All right, so let's take a break now. Amy Simon is with us. She's a historian. I love that. And we'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
And I thank you. Yes, it is Thanksgiving Eve. And we're talking about the early Thanksgivings and the way it all came about. Amy Simon is with us. She's working on a project called She's History, The Most Dangerous Women in America, Then and Now. And Amy, you got the people in the chat room a little upset by saying the country was founded on religion. But I understand what you're saying, that it was freedom of religion. Religion was the reason they left England, because they wanted to be able to practice how they wanted. And a lot of them were very religious people. But many of the founding fathers of the country were also deists. They did not believe in God as, you know, and in organized religion and Christianity.
They had to make a law to say, no, this country isn't about religion. That's not what the laws are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry if I got anybody upset.
That's okay. They're talking. That's a good thing. They're listening and they're discussing. So we like that. So tell us about some of the other people who were instrumental in our early years and having to do around holidays. We mentioned Over the River and Through the Woods.
Yeah, that was such a fun thing to learn today. I'd known about a woman named Lydia Maria Child. She was born in 1802. And she was from Massachusetts, and she was known because she was the first woman in America to make her living as a writer. But she wrote Over the River and Through the Woods. It was a poem. It was originally called A Boy's Thanksgiving Day. And then it was renamed Over the River and Through the Woods, which I just love that. It was in a book that she wrote. She wrote her first book in 1824. She was 22 years old. It was called Hobomek, and it was about Salem and Plymouth. And, you know, she was educated a little bit, but she was a school teacher. And when she wrote her first book called Juvenile Miscellany, that was the name of her book, a children's book, and that's where the poem was first published. And so she ran a private school, and she started writing a lot of books, advice books, called The Frugal Housewife, which was later renamed The American Frugal Housewife, because I guess there was one over in England similarly titled, A Little Girl's Own Book, The Mother's Books. I don't know if she was like an Ann Landers or something like that, but it was an advice book.
Or Martha Stewart.
Martha Stewart. But she was very, very well known. And then, and I love this part, of course, she became an abolitionist. And I know I've told you and said many times that the abolition movement and the women's movement really grew up together. They're both, you know, dealing with equal rights. But a lot, you know, it was very polarizing to the country, and she started to write about abolition, and she wrote something called An Appeal in Favor of That Class of Americans Called Africans. And back then, the titles of these books and papers and speeches just went on forever. They were very, very long, but that was the title. And she said Africans should be educated, and it just caused a big, gigantic firestorm, and she lost a lot of her readers, and she really sacrificed her career for a while. And she wasn't the only one. When I was reading this, I immediately thought about the Grimke sisters. And this, in the 1800s, the Grimke sisters, Angela and Sarah Grimke, they both came out of South Carolina. They were very rich. Their father was an officer in the Continental Army. They were slave owners, and they were opposed to slavery, and they went against their family, and they went and spoke in public. And I think one of them was the first Southerner to speak against slavery. Really nervy, really, really took a lot of courage. All these women had such cojones. I mean, and they were turned out of their family. You know, a lot of these people lost, these women, they really lost a lot because they stood up for what they believed in. And she was one of them. She spent the rest of her whole life just writing about human rights and slavery, and she was really something. So,
and again, this was in the 1840s?
No, it was she was born in 1802, so it was she was 22 years old in 1824. So it was the 1820s, the 1830s, you know, it was right around the Civil War time, pre-Civil War. So, and yeah, so she was the first American female writer to make her living as a writer. That was the first accomplishment. And then she became known writing all these, you know, books about being a housewife. And then she said, hey, guess what? We should educate the slaves. And everybody was like, what? And she just went on, and she spent the rest of her life defending that stance. And, you know, a lot of people were with her, and a lot of people were against her. Slavery broke up the country, you know.
Yes, it did. Right. Yeah. Wow. So her, Lydia Maria Child, she went
and
by
she didn't
Maria.
Like to be called Lydia. You had she liked Maria. Leave the Lydia alone. I don't know why.
Even well, you know, hey, I like Maria better than Lydia also.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Amy Simon is with us and giving us all these great stories about some of these women who, you know, here's the thing. You started researching these founding women, the founding mothers, because we don't hear a lot about them. I mean, in colleges and universities, there are women's studies courses, but they don't even teach about these women, do they?
Not enough. There's, and I'm learning about that too. There are a lot of history courses that teach about women's history, but there aren't any women's history programs, and there need to be more. There's a lot of women's genders programs, a lot of women's studies programs, and a lot of specific courses that deal with gender and, you know, homosexuality and lesbianism and being a different minority as a female, and they're all fascinating. They're all fabulous. But because I'm looking to go back to school, as you know, and when I started to look at the courses, I couldn't find enough. There's, here in Los Angeles, at UCLA, there's a very renowned professor named Ellen DuBois, and I read a lot of her books. She's amazing, and she's a history teacher in UCLA, and she's on it. She's totally fabulous and on it. But, you know, I would definitely like to see a lot more women's history programs or a program and a lot more courses. No, we're not taught it in... I tell you the story when I became a mom and I have two daughters and I go up to the schools and I'd see all the men on the walls and I never saw any of these people like Anne Hutchinson, who we must speak of tonight.
We'll talk about her and
yeah,
a lot
Elizabeth
of these
Cady
other women.
And, you know, people know Susan B. Anthony and Clara Barton and there's like the five. But
right.
There are tons like...
Okay, what? Hold that thought because we got to take a break. Amy Simon is with us. We'll find out about more of these women that we should know about. And our daughters should know about. We'll get there when we return. It is our Thanksgiving Eve program here on Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, we are back on this pre-Thanksgiving show with Amy Simon, my friend, the host of Los Angeles's longest-running one-woman show, Cheerios in My Underwear, and you can find her online at CheeriosInMyUnderwear.com. Amy is involved in all things women and has lately really began researching our founding mothers, and she's working on a big project, and actually we'll be working on a project together, dealing with the women in our history, and it's the umbrella name is She's History, the Most Dangerous Women in America Then and Now. And I was reading what you sent me, Amy, about colonial life.
Oh, man.
You know, the women, the men are credited for doing everything, but it sure looked like these colonial housewives worked their butts off.
Oh, yeah. It was so harsh. Survival. I mean, everything was about food and survival and the elements. They worked from morning till night. It was unbelievable what they had to do. They had to get the water. They build a fire and eat off the land and, you know, whatever was seasonal. And they would go out and kill, you know, animals. And
the
and
women did that?
Pardon?
The women did that?
I don't know if the women did that or not. I just know that they had to, but well, a lot of the women ended up running stuff, you know. Actually, it was interesting, colonial America and even during the revolutionary times, women had a lot more freedom and autonomy out of necessity because the men were gone, and this happens in wartime. The men would go and the women had to run everything, and they did. So, you know, I'll tell you about all the different women who found themselves running the farm. Abigail Adams, she ran the farm while John was off for 10 years. He was away in the Continental Congress. She ran a dairy farm and raised five kids. She had a lot of help. She had, you know, staff, but she ran the farm. Lucretia Mott, another major mommy of the women's movement, she grew up in a fishing. Her father went off and fished, and she and her mom ran a business. And the women, they did what they had to. If they didn't work in the home, they assisted the men in town, and they didn't sit around, ever. There was no idleness at all. I mean, they just worked, and they had very little entertainment. The quilting bee was the big entertainment, or they would do some folk dancing, and, you know, certainly was different than it is today.
Right. So, you know, tomorrow, a lot of people are going to be waking up early to put the turkey in the oven and, you know, make the stuffing and the mashed potatoes and stuff. What was a typical colonial meal like?
Well, from what I can gather, they would start with the fire. And, you know, like I said, they would have to go carry the water and build the fire. And then they I think breakfast was mush, they said, some kind of mush with milk and molasses.
Yeah.
And their big meal, and this is in all the history books, was the midday meal, noon. It was supper. And that's when they would have all the big meats, and they put them in a big pot, and they'd make it a big stew, and they'd put everything in there, and they'd cook it all day long. And then they did this other thing called puddings, where they would, I wish I could visualize it, and I've been trying to find a picture of it, and I haven't been successful, but they say they would cook the meats above the stew in some kind of fabric. And they called it a pudding, and they would cook it all day, and they would eat that for lunch, and then for dinner later at night, they'd have warmed up leftovers. But they would do everything. They'd make shoes, and they'd make candles, and, I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Yeah, they couldn't go down to Target and get, you know, when the kids were growing.
They did everything. They milked the cows. They churned the butter. They made the cheese. You know, they made the clothes. And I'll tell you, laundry, oh, my God. Laundry was like the biggest deal. And the thing that made it so difficult was all the water. They needed so much water. And you saw how the clothes were back then. They were big.
Yeah.
Lots of clothes. And they got dirty all the time because they were walking. They didn't have paved streets. So laundry was just huge, really big.
Yeah. You know, I don't think I would have made it. I guess, you know what you have. You know what you grow up around. But, wow, sometimes when we think we have it tough.
Oh, no. Reading this stuff, I'm just like, oh, my goodness. I wouldn't have made it. I wouldn't have made it back then. It was just so much hard physical labor day in, day out. And then there was illness and sickness. Very depressing. Very depressing stuff. You know, how did they survive? It was survival. It was really about survival. And then there were wars all over the place. And then the Indians. And I did want to mention a story that I read about today about a woman named Dunstan, Hannah Dunstan. Did I tell you about her, Hannah Dunstan?
Mm-mm.
Hannah Dunstan, yeah. In the early 1800s, she was 1700s. She was kidnapped. She was one of the few women that we can read about that was kidnapped by the Native Americans, and she was led into Canada. And there was I'm sorry that I don't know enough about the Canadian and American history back then, but there was something going on, and the Native Americans would kidnap people, and they led her into Canada with a whole bunch of people. And what happened was, she killed them all. They were sleeping, and this woman killed 9 Native Americans. And then she led the party out away from the camp, and then she went back and took their scalps. She skinned them. You know how they did that back then? She did that to prove to everybody. She became a hero. She's in the books. You know, Google her, you'll see. She was King James or King Henry, one of them. She was a big hero of that time because she escaped a Native American kidnapping and she brought the scalps back. There was so much brutality. It was like, oof.
Yeah.
But there you go. There's a gal that, decided she didn't want to hang around in Canada and did what she had to do.
All right. She took it into her own hands.
Yeah, she
Hannah
sure
Dunstan.
Did.
Now, you mentioned Anne Hutchinson before.
Yeah.
What about her?
Well, Anne Hutchinson basically was inspired the biggest conflict of the 17th century, and that is something that is taught in the schools, or should be. Some people seem to think that name is somewhat familiar. But she was definitely not one of your average submissive housewives of the colonial period. She came over from England. Her father was a minister, and there was a lot of religious turmoil going on in England in the 1600s, and he had some different views than the church, and voiced them, and he was, what they say, silenced by the church, and he actually got his butt thrown in jail for about a year, and they called it dissenting religious views. That's how they referred to it. So anyway, they all came over. She came over to England. There was a guy named John Cotton who was one of the leaders of a different religious, sect, sort of. So they followed him over, and she came over here, And she was a midwife and a nurse. She had about 15 kids, which was very normal back then. That's how many kids women had, because most of them didn't survive. So they had a lot. So some would survive to help them run things, the farm, wow, the house, all of it. So she was a midwife. And she, you know, came from a family of challenging authority. And so women in that time were not allowed to speak in public or to be a part of public affairs, and they were not allowed to talk about religion. They were not allowed to participate. So she started chatting about religion to her girlfriends. And she had these weekly only meetings, which I call the first girls' night out. And so she would sit around, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, she's delivering all these babies all the time.
It's a coffee clutch.
Pardon?
A coffee clutch.
But, you know, think about it. She's a midwife, and delivering babies, you know, there's a lot of, oh, God. I mean, God's name must have come up a gazillion times.
Right.
And plus, there's a lot of downtime, you know, labor and delivery, very intense, and a lot of downtime. So I'm thinking they're all sitting around talking about God. I would be. Well, she got a little carried away, and she started to, you know, have sort of different views. And then she started to attract men and businessmen. And, you know, people started to agree with her. There was this thing called the covenant of works versus the covenant of faith. And she believed in one and the church believed in another, and they did not. And she wasn't, you know, any kind of authority figure, and she was a woman. So she got arrested.
Because she was talking about church and God.
Because she was discussing religion first she was preaching. That was what she was charged with. But one of the guys that came to her meetings was a governor. His name was Vane, Governor Vane, and he was a big fan of her. She had a lot of fans. But then he wasn't the governor anymore, and the new governor was Winthrop, and he didn't like her. He didn't like what she was doing, so they put her on trial. It was just the biggest. It was like the OJ of the day. It was a huge trial. It divided everybody. And the thing that really got everybody was that she was very smart, and she defended herself brilliantly, and she knew her stuff. And they were like, "We do not mean to discourse with those of your sex." And she's like, really? Well, what law have I broken? And if you read the trial transcripts, they are absolutely fascinating. She was cool as a cucumber. She totally knew her stuff. She fought back. She was intellectually superior to these guys. And, boy, they didn't like that. And she ended up, she had a lot of ministers on her side. And then her leader was John Cotton. He turned on her because he saw the way it was going. What a creep. And she ended up getting excommunicated and banished. She was charged with heresy and sedition, which means that you're challenging the church and that you're challenging authority. And it was gigantic. It went on for a year, and her husband stood by her, and she had a lot of people stand by her, but then she was banished, and she went off to Rhode Island. Now, one of her followers was a woman named Mary Dyer, who was a Quaker, and I don't know if we have time, but the Quakers awesome. The Quakers were fantastic. They're still around today. They had a lot of different beliefs, and they were called the Quakers because they would get very excited when they had their meetings, and they would quake. That's why they were called the Quakers.
Really?
Yes, really.
Well,
it's true.
I love that.
I know.
And Quakers are nonviolent people.
They're very nonviolent. They also believed that women should be educated. They did not believe in weapons. And they just had a whole different view. They thought spiritual guidance came through an inner light as opposed to, like, scripture. Mm-hmm. So they didn't believe in taking oaths. They didn't believe in titles. They just had
good,
a whole
I like
different...
the Quakers.
Oh, I'm in love with the Quakers. Lucretia Mott was a Quaker. Yeah. Alice Paul, who got the 19th Amendment put through, was a Quaker. Don't get me started with the Quakers, because they are really, they had a lot, and they really did a lot for abolition. They were fantastic. Just, you know, equal rights, human rights, that's what they were about.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, one of the Quakers was a woman named Mary Dyer. She was one of Anne Hutchinson's followers, and she followed Anne Hutchinson to Rhode Island, where they started the new community. And then it was the law in Boston. They were in Massachusetts. Something happened, and they ended up in Massachusetts, and they said, you're not allowed to be a Quaker. And they hung people for being Quakers. And Mary
Wait,
Dyer,
what happened to religious freedom? That's why they came over here in the first place.
Exactly. I know. Isn't it something? They came over for religion, and they were persecuted. Lots of religions.
Of course.
Yeah, so I think that's one of the reasons they made the laws the way those founding fathers, thank goodness, that they did. But she was very courageous. She didn't run away. She said, nope, I'm not leaving. I am a Quaker, and I'm staying here. And they hung her.
Oh, my goodness.
So she's in the history books as a martyr, Mary Dyer. Oh, and then Anne Hutchinson, it's such a sad story what happened to her. She got killed by the Native Americans. She ended up in Dutch, New York, which was Long Island, and she just was kind of in the wrong place at the wrong time from what I can gather. And there was, you know, a big problem with the Dutch and that particular tribe of Native Americans, and they killed all of her family except for one little girl. And I just, imperialism killed her. She went through all that, and she died in her 50s. Very, very sad ending to Anne Hutchinson. But boy, she, you know, she's called the mother of the First Amendment. She really is. That's what
wow.
she's known as. So,
you know, I love, and this is why I love talking to you about this stuff, Amy Simon. And I love the fact that you're working on this new project. She's History, the Most Dangerous Women in America, Then and Now. Because, again, some of these names might be in the history books, but they're certainly not household names. And the women who were around at the beginnings of this nation of ours don't get enough credit for all they did to help bring us to where we are and where we're supposed to be.
Yeah, are you ever preaching to the choir? Exactly. I have such a fire in my belly about this, and I think a lot of it is because I have daughters. I mean, I was always kind of a feminist because it was the 70s and I went through the women's movement, and I don't know, it just spoke to me, and I just always really resonated with feminism. But when I started to do the research, and as we've spoken, when I got divorced and I started to research the laws, and I just couldn't believe that it was 2000 and we were still having these archaic laws and discrimination and all of it. But I just will not leave this earth until girls know more about Abigail Adams than Paris Hilton. I just...
And as they should. And unfortunately, you know, we know a lot about Abigail Adams because she was very prolific. She
right.
wrote a
2000
lot of letters.
Yeah.
Right. So.
And she was married to a president. That didn't
uh-huh.
hurt either.
Right.
That was a big deal.
All these other women who you've, you know, brought to my attention. And mm-hmm. so just to let our listeners know, you know, last time we spoke on the air, I think, or the time before, they were talking about doing a screenplay about one of these women, but now it's sort of taken to the next level, and we still have to sort of hone down what we're going to do, but basically a whole multimedia project to bring these women into the 21st
you know,
century.
I have to tell you that as I was working today, and when you do research and do historical research, one thing leads to another, and it's really fascinating, and one of my heroes is Sojourner Truth, who was an abolitionist. She was a slave that ran away, and she ended up preaching. She's well known. I mean, she is a name that you've heard of, right? Mm-hmm. Have you heard of? Or maybe
no.
not. I don't want to assume.
No.
Okay, Sojourner Truth was an amazing slave
Sojourner?
That ran away.
Like S-O-J-O-U-R-N-E-R?
Yep. And it breaks my heart that we don't know who she is. And she had a very, very famous speech called Ain't I a Woman? And she went and spoke in Akron, Ohio at a women's convention in about 1840-something, I think 1841, and she got booed off the stage, but she ended up getting up there, and I happened, doing my research today, I happened across a YouTube video of Alice Walker reciting her speech, and I just sat in front of my computer and cried, because I'd been
wow.
reading these words for a long time, but to hear Alice Walker, this amazing woman, black woman, reading this speech, and, you know, Alice Walker is
right.
And it was beautiful. And she's like, you men say that we can't have any, I'm totally rewording it here. We, you know, you men say we don't have any rights because we're women and we need to be helped into a carriage and we need to go someplace that's special. Well, I ain't never been helped in no carriage and ain't I a woman? And she goes on and on about, I have taken the bullets and I've been whipped and I've worked the fields and ain't I a woman? And oh, it's just this speech that she wrote. It's amazing. And she does this whole thing about Eve. She does this beautiful thing about, you know, Eve was the first woman that God wrote about, and she, you know, had the power to turn the whole world upside down. Well, maybe all us women can turn it right back side up. And it's just like, ah! And she was cheered, and she's a hero. She is an absolute hero. And even when I was working in the school last year, there weren't very many books, but you can bet there was one on Sojourner Truth. I mean, they are teaching about her, thank goodness.
Well, that's good to know. And again, you know, hopefully over the coming year, we will we'll be able to put our heads together. And it's your research that's just phenomenal
yeah.
here.
Well, I am supposed to be doing a show about it in New York at the ARM, which is the American Research of Mothering Conference for Mamapalooza, Moms in the Arts, and the Motherhood Foundation. And so I should be performing this in May in New York. You know, I'll keep you posted. But
and
yeah,
of course,
I'm getting it out there.
Most definitely. And we will let everybody know here when that happens. And we will talk, of course, before then. All right. Amy Simon, CheeriosInMyUnderwear.com is her website. You can go there and read all the fabulous female facts and a lot of her writings and and a whole lot more. Amy, it is always a pleasure. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving tomorrow, and I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, and I am very thankful for you, Nicole Sandler, and all the great stuff you do on the radio. I love you, honey.
I love you, too. Thank you. All right, we'll take a break, and I'll come back and tell you some things I'm thankful for to wrap things up for this Wednesday night. Don't go away.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.